Welcome back to the Durr Show. As you can see, I'm dressed for tonight's Game 3, Celtics versus Warriors. I'm in full uniform. This sweater was given to me by Red Auerbach. I used to sit next to Red Auerbach at Celtics games. I had season tickets for close to 50 years, and I saw every single home championship game. I saw Bill Russell, John Havlicek and Bob Cousy and Larry Bird, and you name it. I saw them all. I was in the locker room a few times when the Celtics won. I brought pastrami sandwiches before the game to Red Auerbach, and we would sit and chew the fat. Had a little room where he would come and the old timers would come by, Cousy and Havlicek, and I would schmooze with them. It was great. But after twice bringing him pastrami sandwiches from a particular deli that both he and I liked, both games were lost. And Red, who was very superstitious, said, no more pastrami sandwiches from that restaurant. So I brought him lesser pastrami, but we won more games. So that was a good and interesting trade-off. You know, I started out as a Brooklyn Dodger fan, went to a lot of games at Ebbets Field, particularly after the sixth inning, because my high school was four blocks away from Ebbets Field. And when we would get out of class, we would run to Ebbets Field, and we knew a guy, and he would let us in free in the sixth inning, and we would sit in the empty box seats. And I saw Carl Erskine's, the end of his no-hitter. I saw great events. Of course, I saw Jackie Robinson play numerous times, Pee Wee Reese and Gil Hodges and, you name it, Duke Snyder. So I was not a fan. I was a fanatic. And I even own two Brooklyn Dodger rings, one 1947, Jackie Robinson's break-in year, and 1955 championship ring, when the only time the Brooklyn Dodgers ever won the World Series. So if I seem a little, ready for action, it's because the Celtics are playing. It's 1-1. Game 3 is always a very important game, not as important as Game 4. Game 4 in a 7-game series is almost always the most important, because one team is usually ahead 2-1. And if that team wins and they go ahead 3-1, they're almost certain to win the series. But if the other team wins and they tie 2-2, then it's anybody's series. So hoping for a victory tonight and or a victory tomorrow. And I hope I haven't offended any of the Warriors fans or any of the Knicks fans. I used to be a Knicks fan, but I moved to Boston. You got to, go where the action is. And Boston Garden was a great place to watch games, as was Fenway Park. Now, let's turn to serious issues. I want to talk a little bit about the Johnny Depp case and whether or not that really marks a change in some ways in the excesses of the Me Too movement. Is the pendulum swinging? I'm also going to talk about the political defeat of Chesa Boudin, who lost a recall election yesterday, a radical left guy who I've known since he's a child, knew his grandfather very well. And he lost. And does that also mark a change in direction? And does it indicate a pendulum swinging away from progressive, woke, hardline, radical, left-wing approaches, both to sexual issues and political issues? So let's start with Johnny Depp. So just to give you a little background of the lawsuit, it's a strange lawsuit. The article itself that gave rise to the defamation suit, although it was signed by Amber Heard, was actually written largely by the American Civil Liberties Union. Yeah, the ACLU is supposed to be neutral. And they're helping somebody write an article defaming an actor whose politics or sexual attitudes they didn't agree with. What the hell is the ACLU doing writing or ghosting an article that becomes not only the subject of a defamation suit, but a finding by a jury that it was defamatory? I don't know why the ACLU wasn't sued. It could have been sued too for writing some of the defamatory words. Now, remember, the article itself didn't mention Johnny Depp by name, but it was clear that it was talking about him, and it was essentially accusing him of sexual abuse. So One of the issues in the case was truth as a defense, or as an offense in this case. Did Johnny Depp ever engage in violence or sexually assaultive behavior to Amber Heard? And the jury verdict seems to be a clear statement. No. Women don't always tell the truth and men don't always lie. The mantra of the Me Too movement was rejected by this jury, and I hope it continues to be rejected. There's no gene for lying in men or telling the truth in women. Every case should be decided on the evidence without a presumption in favor of men or presumption in favor of women. Obviously, I'm involved in a lawsuit now where the woman who accused me is a serial liar. She's lied about everybody. She lied about George Mitchell. She lied about Bill Richardson. She lied about Ehud Barak. She lied about a member of the Pritzker family. She lied about virtually anybody she's ever had any encounter with. She first claimed she was 15 when she met Jeffrey Epstein. Then she admitted she was 17 or just a month before 17, but we think it was over 17. She claimed that she had sex with people when she was below age, and then she admitted she was above age. She claimed that she lived in Colorado when she lived in Australia, and so, you know, lie after lie after lie after lie after lie. But we'll see what the jury does in that case. Obviously, I have a point of view because I'm involved in litigation. She sued me for defamation. She withdrew any claim that she had any sex with me, withdrew any claim that I did anything wrong sexually. Her only lawsuit is claiming that I defamed her. But I'm defending that lawsuit and I'm suing her for falsely saying in public that I had sex with her. I never had sex with her. I never met her. I never heard of her. I never had any contact with her. And I'm going to prove that beyond any doubt. Her own lawyer on tape admitted she was wrong, simply wrong. Her other lawyer admitted that there were no prominent people involved other than Jeffrey Epstein. So I think it's a fairly clear case, but we'll see what the jury does. And, you know, the jury verdict in the Johnny Depp case gives me some hope that juries can see through the mantra of women always tell the truth and men always lie and decide the case on the evidence. I just hope it is decided on the evidence. One of the reasons that Johnny Depp won his case is that he had great lawyers on his side, really, really excellent lawyers. They did a terrific job in cross-examining Amber Heard. And some people say, oh, they picked on her. No, that's the job of the lawyer, to examine an accusing witness and to examine somebody who may have made some defamatory statements about an innocent person. That's the way our legal system operates. You know, the verdict was a little bit complex. The jury found that Amber Heard had defamed Johnny Depp and gave him a verdict in excess of $10 million. But they also found that Johnny Depp's lawyer, not him, had defamed her, but they gave her only a small amount of money. And the net benefit was around, I guess, a little bit more than $10 million. Probably there'll be appeals, and we'll see what the Court of Appeals says about this. But at the moment, the verdict seems to be at least a slight pendulum swing away from all women are always truthful and all men are always liars. That's un-American. It's bigoted. It's biased. It's sexist. It's all of the things that civil libertarians and decent people should be fighting against. Every woman should be believed based on the evidence. Every man should be believed based on the evidence. But that's based on the evidence that the belief should occur. Nobody should be believed because of their race, their gender, their religion, or how they look. I've mentioned before that the Bible commands judges do not recognize faces. That also means do not recognize genders, do not recognize races, do not recognize anything other than the evidence. Cases must be decided on the evidence, not on any predispositions based on these other factors, invidious factors, which if a state were to use them, would be deemed unconstitutional. So let's hope that this is the first of many jury verdicts in which the result is based on the evidence. The result is based on a jury objectively evaluating what happened rather than on the gender of the people. Now, of course, the fact that both of them are actors may very well have played some role, but you don't know which way it cut. Obviously, the marriage was a fraught one, a difficult one. The relationship was a fraught one and a difficult one. And it's not surprising to me that the jury rendered some verdict in favor of each side, or put probably more precisely, a little bit against each side. Jurors probably didn't love either of the litigants, but they decided based on the evidence that Johnny Depp hadn't done what the article written in part by the American Civil Liberties Union said he had done. So it is something of a rebuke to the Me Too movement, but we shouldn't be too confident that that will continue. Every jury is different. Every judge is different. Judges sometimes have even more prejudices than jurors. And some judges think they're put on the bench because they are a woman, or because they're Black, or because they're Jewish, or because they're whatever, and decide they have to, you know, satisfy their constituents. That's not the way justice should be done. Justice should be done without regard to why a person was put on the bench. I hate the fact that we called some judges Democratic judges and Republican judges. Judges are supposed to be out of politics. They're supposed to give up any of their partisan affiliations. John Harlan, who was a great justice of the Supreme Court, the day he was appointed to the court, he stopped voting. He didn't even want to vote. Of course, judges are entitled to vote, but he didn't want to vote because he didn't want in any way partisanship to either actually affect his decisions or be perceived as affecting his decisions. So he was Caesar's wife. He leaned over backwards, not only to be just and fair, but to appear to be just and fair. And he was a remarkable man. I knew Justice Harlan. I once went to his home when I was a law clerk to deliver papers involving a death penalty case. And he was sitting in his somewhat darkened apartment with his wife at a long table, separated, I don't know, by 10, 15 feet. Maybe I made up the number. Maybe it was less than that, but it seemed that way. And they were both dressed up. They were just having dinner together, and they were, you know, wearing appropriate garb for an evening out. And he was very conservative and very traditional. You could not curse in front of him. He wasn't a man of great humor. He was very stoic. His grandfather had served on the Supreme Court, was one of the dissenting justices in Plessy versus Ferguson. I think maybe the only dissenting justice in Plessy versus Ferguson. He came from an enormously wealthy family. A whole county in Virginia is named after him, Harlan County. They weren't so good to their coal miners, but Justice John Harlan was a great man. So he had a case that came before him in which some young whippersnapper kid named Cohen, against the war in Vietnam, walks into a courthouse with a jacket that says F, you fill in U and the C and the or what else, the draft. And he was arrested and prosecuted for, I don't know what, disturbing the peace or something. And Harlan was assigned the opinion. I think a lot of people thought that would be the end of the case. Harlan, my God, somebody used the F word. No, he said, you know, one man's curse is another man's lyric. One man's obscenity is another person's lyric. And said the First Amendment doesn't judge people by their ideas or by the dignity of the way they present them. And he reversed the conviction and ordered the defendant to be freed. Those were back in the days when the First Amendment meant something, when the ACLU wasn't busy writing op-eds against an actor, but was defending Nazis and Skokie and other despicable people whose free speech rights had been denied. That's when I was on the national board of the ACLU, and we really tried to defend everybody's free speech rights. Today, the ACLU was on the wrong side of free speech on most college campuses. There's actually a director, not a director, but an employee, a high-ranking employee of the ACLU in charge of transgender rights, which the ACLU should be involved in, who is in favor of banning books. The ACLU in favor of banning books. My God, what the founders of the ACLU would be turning over in their graves. The ACLU is in favor of banning a book about transgenders because they don't like its content. Goodbye, ACLU. welcome fire, freedom for individual rights, and I forget what the rest of it is of expression. But fire has taken over the ACLU. It used to just be on college campuses, but just yesterday I got an email. I'm a contributor and a very close friend of one of the founders, and they just announced they were going to go out of beyond classrooms and campuses and defend freedom of expression everywhere. Count me in. Count me in. No more contributions to the ACLU. No one should contribute to the ACLU unless you're in favor of censorship. Everybody should contribute to FIRE if you're against censorship. And I suspect that most people who watch my show are against censorship. So let's turn now for a minute to the other pendulum swing that seems to be occurring. So I've known Chesa Boudin for years. Chesa was named after a woman who had been accused of, maybe convicted, I'm not sure, but accused of murdering cops, and who ran away and I think ended up living in, I don't remember, Algeria or somewhere. But she was a hero of the hard left, even though she was probably a terrorist and a murderer. And Chesa was named after her by his four parents. I say four parents because his biological parents both went to prison for life imprisonment for being involved in the Brinks robbery, in which four or five people were killed, including two policemen, and they were sentenced to life imprisonment. Both have now been released. One just recently died, Kathy Boudin, who then taught at Columbia after she was released from prison. Imagine somebody from the right being released from prison after terrorism being hired by Columbia. It won't happen, believe me. There is a real bias there. So those are the biological parents. He wasn't brought up by them. He visited them in prison, but he was brought up by two other members of the Weathermen, Ayers and Bernadette Dorn, very radical, probably in the old days, you'd call them communists, anarchists, supporters of violence, you know, whether they themselves engaged in violence, I don't know. But they were, you know, extreme radicals. Chesa himself, brilliant, brilliant young man. I had dinner with him a few years ago. He, with this terrible family background, managed to go and get a Rhodes Scholarship, went to Yale Law School, a very good student. And everybody tells me, I haven't seen him in years, a decent person personally, but his views are quite radical. He ran for district attorney on a radical platform, some of which I actually agree with. Let's not put minor offenders in jail. Let's maybe divert them to drug programs, etc. He vacillated on defund the police, but generally he bought into the woke, progressive, hard left agenda, and in San Francisco, he got elected on that platform. But even San Francisco, it was too much for San Francisco. And yesterday, they recalled him overwhelmingly. I think the vote was 60-40%. It was a direct rejection of the woke program on crime, and a statement that we don't want to defund the police. We don't want to release people on bail who have a likelihood of recidivating and committing serious crimes. In fact, somebody who was on parole committed a serious crime just in the run-up to the election. So that played a role. I'm not here commenting on Chesa himself. As I said, as a person, he seems like a good person. I like him. And his grandfather was a close friend of mine, Leonard Boudin, who's one of the great civil liberties lawyers of the 20th century. He and I did a lot of work together on a lot of cases, and I admired him enormously. He was not a radical personally. He was very, very liberal, but very sensible. And don't know whether he would have approved of his grandson's approach to crime and justice. But the point is not personal. The point is that he stood for something. He stood for woke, radical, progressive, you name it. And it was a rejection of that. I think it was also a rejection of the double standard of justice, where you have people who went into the Capitol on January 6th and They are being prosecuted to the hilt, some of them being held without bail in solitary confinement, if they're to be believed. I don't know that to be a fact, but that's what we hear. And it's just in contrast to what happened to some of the Black Lives Matter and other racial protesters. For example, two lawyers were arrested for throwing Molotov cocktails into an unoccupied police car. And their sentencing recommendation has just been reduced. It was originally up to around 10 years. Now it's around, I don't know, 24 months or something like that. So there does seem to be disparate and different justice, depending on whether you're a radical of the left or a radical of the right. And I think there was a rejection of that as well. Pardon me, my throat's a little parched. So let's turn now to a few letters in the time we still have remaining. Okay. The left and right play their ill-mannered games like petulant children in a sandbox. Meantime, the only ones rubbing and stinging and blinding sand out of their eyes are the American people. I mean, that may be exaggerated language, but I think I generally agree with its thrust. The extreme right, the extreme left are hurting America. And the squeezing out of the center, particularly in the Democratic Party, but in the Republican Party as well, are, I think, hurting both parties and hurting America. And I agree with the sentiments expressed in that article, in that letter. Okay. How can you deny election fraud? You're pretty close to Liz Cheney in my book. Only blind idiots can watch 2,000 mules and think it was an honest election. You suck, Starry. I think it was an honest election, so maybe I suck. But I have seen no hard, believable evidence that would show that Donald Trump was legitimately elected president of the United States, either by electoral votes, which is all that counts, or by popular vote. So I think the election was fair. I have always respected you, but I totally disagree with you on some things. Video shows the doors were unlocked from inside by Capitol Police. I agree with that. Waved in by cops and insiders. I agree with that. Not authorized is an unfair statement. What happened is you're not allowed to go into the Capitol when the Capitol is closed. But if the police allow you to come in, that changes everything. And I'm making that defense in favor of a young man, a lawyer, who was in the Capitol, and he honestly believes he was let in. So I don't disagree with the thrust of this letter. I think for some people, at least, they believed, and that's all that matters for intent, that the police did not oppose their entrance as long as they did no damage, as long as they made no threats. My client did no damage, made no threats, stayed for a short period of time and left when he was told to do so by the police. So I'm hoping we will win our case. And more about the election was fair. The election was fair. The election was fair. No. Especially when you consider how lightly BLM, Black Lives Matter rioters, and others of the far left are treated. All I have to do is watch Andy Ngo and see daily reports on this. The January 6th committee is more like the Spanish Inquisition, an agenda and a means to an end. No, it's not like the Spanish Inquisition. The Spanish Inquisition took people and burned them at the stake and made them convert and change their religions. Let's not exaggerate. But the committee has some similarities to McCarthyism. That's bad enough. And then here's a somewhat nice letter, rare. Say what you want about Professor Dershowitz, but he is the John Adams of our time. He is a staunch champion of our constitutional republic and the Constitution. I do not agree with his liberal position on many things, but his insistence on fair play and the shoe on the other foot test is exactly what the founding fathers envisioned. America is a better place because of Allen's bravery and brilliant legal mind. Jamie Raskin is the new McCarthy and needs to be in prison. I don't agree with that. Jamie was my student. I actually represented his father in a case many years earlier. I like Jamie as a person. I disagree with some of his extreme views, and I agree with many of his views on gay marriage, on reasonable gun control, on abortion. So, you know, we agree and disagree. That's the way it should be. I don't think anybody should be down the line, a true Scotsman, agree with his party or her party on everything. That's just not the way America is supposed to work. Okay, you have a question, Elon. What is it?
I'm going to take a moment to do this. Okay. Agree or disagree. I wish the trolls who don't know the allegations against Professor Dershowitz would were baseless would leave. Do you think?
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, you know, what happens is whenever I do a Skype or anything, the trolls come out and say, you know, how often were you on Epstein's Island? Once with my wife and daughter, when the island was just being built. The only people on the island were the people who were involved in the building of the island. There were no young people on the island at all. How many times were, you know, you here and there on the plane? Never. Did you have sex with underage? Never. I've never had sex with an underage person in my life. I've never touched or had any sexual contact with anybody connected with Jeffrey Epstein. It's just not only false, but provably false. But, you know, as Goebbels said, if you repeat a lie often enough, people will come to believe it. So these trolls are just mini Goebbels. You know, my favorite song when I was growing up, I don't know if you know this song, but when I was growing up, our favorite song was Hitler had only one. Well, I got to get the middle of it right. Hitler, he only had one ball. Goering had two, but oh, so small. Himmler had something similar, and Goebbels had no balls at all. Sorry for the rudeness, but that was the song we sang when we were kids. And so these trolls are Goebbels. I don't know whether they have no balls at all, but they certainly have no willingness to come out and identify themselves. Because I assure you, anybody who calls me or accuses me of anything improper and gives a name and an address, I will immediately sue them for defamation and collect all their money because there's no evidence of any truth to any of that. So, you know, trolls, you keep trolling, but it's more of a reflection of you. But give your names. Give your names if you're a troll so you can be held responsible. And I will prove malice, and I will prove damages, and I will prove that you did this knowing full well that I never did anything wrong. I did absolutely nothing wrong. I have nothing to apologize for. I will never apologize. I have a book coming out about that. It's called The Price of Principle. You know, how sticking to principles and sticking to the shoe on the other foot test can cost you. Can cost you friends, can cost you clients, can cost you relationships, and can cost you to have trolls. So trolls want to come, let them come. But I'm not going to stop my attitudes based on that. Okay. More and more of these. Come on, Dershowitz. You're an intelligent man. You knew damn well the election was not fair and was absolutely rigged. I have no respect for you lying and pandering to the left. You know, a lot of Republicans believe that the election was fair. I'm not saying the election was absolutely pristine everywhere. I said it from day one. I think the Pennsylvania vote was wrong, not because of fraud, but because they applied the wrong legal standard. They shouldn't have allowed people to vote beyond a certain day because the legislature didn't authorize that. So I was on the Republican Trump side on Pennsylvania. I don't think there were enough votes in dispute to change even Pennsylvania, but I have no basis for believing that the whole election would have been changed if a complete audit were done of all the votes. I'm confident that President Biden won the election fairly and legitimately, and that certainly there was no deliberate fraud sufficient to change the outcome of the elections. And then finally, of course, the McCarthyite letter. I get these McCarthyite letters all the time. You can fill in the blanks. You were Epstein's lawyers, like anyone cares what else you have to say. Just fill in the blank. You were the lawyer for the Boston Massacre is accused, John Adams. We have nothing else to say. You, Mr. Lincoln, were the lawyers for several accused murderers, one of whom at least you've acknowledged was guilty. We have nothing else to say. That's McCarthyism. Of course I represented Epstein. I would do it again and again. And I represented people much worse than Epstein. I represented people who were accused of mass murder during the Yugoslav period of time. Mostly when you represent people like that, you make a plea bargain and they're found guilty and they go to jail. Sometimes they're found innocent. Sometimes they are innocent. But that's the American way. And, you know, yeah, I'm never going to apologize for who I represented, Klaus von Bülow, Mike Tyson. I represented many, many people accused of murder, and virtually all of them, I won their cases. I hope they were all innocent, but I don't know that. I wasn't there. The evidence was either insufficient or there were constitutional violations. But that's what a lawyer does. If you don't like it, I got a solution for you. Go to Iran. Go to China. Go to Russia. Go to Belarus. Then you're not going to find any lawyers who will ever defend anybody who the government is against. You will enjoy it so much. And maybe you'll even talk to those lawyers and listen to them. But me, you won't listen to, because I represented somebody you don't like. I will continue to do it to the end of my days. That's what the Constitution requires. And I believe in the Constitution. If you watch tomorrow night's events, highly produced, staged January 6th congressional hearing, please remember who's on the committee and who's not on the committee, and ask yourself the question, if there were people on the other side on the committee, what kind of questions would they be asking? Ask those questions yourself. Otherwise, you'll be taken in by the one-sided and biased propaganda that will be portrayed as a committee of Congress. This is not a legitimate committee of Congress. This was a committee which excluded people who have a different narrative and a different view. And so the conclusion is already foregone. So if you're going to watch it, and we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it on Monday as soon as it's over. I don't know how long it will take. I know it starts in prime time, and I'll watch it as long as there isn't a Celtics game. But this is a Celtics game. I can tell you, I'm not going to watch Congress. I prefer watching the Celtics over Congress. So see you next Monday.